Yeah, I had a student one semester who is he's an international student, and he brought me aside to the side and he said, "Professor, I want to know what job I can get here in the States that makes a lot of money, because the whole reason why I'm here is to get a job that makes a lot of money so I can send money back home to my family. I am their main source of support and I'm in the land of opportunity, so I just need a job that makes a ton of money so I can support my family." And so I said to him the same thing we always say to people in America. I said, "Well, what's your passion? What do you care about?" And he was just like, "Why do people here keep asking me that? I don't care about passion. I care about money. I need to make money to take care of my family. I don't care what it's in. It just needs to be enough." And so I told him, "Well, here's the reason why a lot of people here in America say passion, at least from my perspective, is because you can make money doing just about anything. You can make money in this country doing anything. I know a woman who makes her living with snakes, and she does photo shoots with snakes, and she does snake therapy with snakes, and that this is her thing. And she makes a ton of money and is super famous because who else does that? And she's really passionate about her snake charming abilities." So I'm like, I wouldn't tell my middle school students, "Someday you should grow up and do snake charming." But obviously that works for this woman, right? So I was like, in this country, you can really, if you have a mind for it, back to that mindset piece, if you have a mind for it, you can make money doing just about anything. And that's why a lot of times we start with what's your passion? Because if you're really excited about it and passionate about it, you can find a way, move the pieces around, get the connections you need to somehow make that work for you.
Welcome to the Three Steps to Thrive podcast, where each show will show you three simple, practical, and actionable steps to improve your life or your business. Now, here's your host, James Lamb. And guess what? That's me. Hi, folks. Welcome to Three Steps to Thrive. My name is James Lamb. I'm your host, and I'm so excited to have my good friend and networking coach, Charisse Alexander. Charisse, say hello.
Hi, everybody.
Charisse is an amazing person, and I'm so glad you joined us. Now, every so often, we have a what's called a new and novel category. So these are people, we always interview successful entrepreneurs, and we also interview up-and-comers as well. And Charisse is definitely an up-and-comer. And to be honest, I think if I interviewed you next month, Charisse, you would no longer be new and novel. You would definitely be established. But I'm just lucky enough right now to catch you at this early stage. So just a reminder, folks, at the end, Charisse is going to tell us her three practical, actionable, and simple steps to improve the business or improve the business owner. Now, Charisse has a really varied background. Let me tell you a little bit more about her. So Charisse Alexander is a proclaimed business networking coach who helps entrepreneurs create profitable partnerships through authentic connection. Now, this is the really interesting part that I know you want to talk about your business, but I want to talk about this part too. Charisse went from being a PhD candidate at an Ivy League school to being homeless in New York City at the height of the global financial crisis in 2008. And that experience taught her that while achievements and degrees are something to be proud of, human connection is the most valuable asset a person could have. Now she teaches entrepreneurs the power of making a micro impact, one person at a time, in order to grow their network and business. So welcome to the show, Charisse.
Thank you so much for having me, James. I'm excited about what we're going to talk about today.
Oh, you're welcome. Just so you know, so I met Charisse in person before the entire COVID hit. And so just so listeners know, we're recording during the time of COVID. And, you know, at that networking event, you were the most buoyant, happy, non-judgmental person I've ever seen. And I don't know if you knew what you were doing at the time, but you seemed to live networking. Tell us a little bit about meeting other people. You love it, don't you?
I do now. I didn't always. This was not always the case. I am an introvert, which means that I get my energy from my alone time, and being around people is super draining. So what I do is I have to take a lot of alone time before I go to networking events or conferences, make sure I'm supercharged with my batteries, bring my A game. And then after events, I usually need there's kind of a recovery period where I can kind of you know, relax and reflect and really think and just be quiet. But I do love meeting people as an idea, right? Sometimes it can be exhausting, but I do love meeting people because there are so many cool people out there doing so many cool things. And every time I meet someone new, I'm always amazed and surprised. You can't tell just by looking at somebody, mm-hmm. what they've been through, their values, what they are excited about. And I feel like each person's kind of like this little treasure mm-hmm. chest. And I call it treasure hunting when you go in and try to find those interesting little nuggets about a person that the average person might not know just from a short 5-minute conversation. And I just think that's super fun.
Sure. Now it's interesting because you're a self-proclaimed introvert, but at the same time, you own a company that helps people get out and network with other people, which is interesting, right? So tell me a little bit about, because you were saying that it can be quite challenging and draining after a while. Mm-hmm. So when you go in, I'm curious because I find, you know, when I go to an event, I start really high and then I kind of like die at the end, and then people try to network with me and I'm like, oh, okay, do the right thing. Do you find that, or do you find you get a natural high from networking?
I definitely don't get a natural high from networking. I think that's kind of more of an extrovert tendency, because the more you're with people, that charges you and that energizes you. And so the more people, the more energy you have. What I do though, is I do kind of do future pacing. I picture what it's going to be like at this event, and I add in breaks, which is something I highly recommend, that people who do tend to be drained in social situations, I do highly recommend that you put breaks into the event. So if it's something where you're going to be sitting there for 8 hours a day, just listening to someone talking at you, even though you're not engaging in conversation, that can still be exhausting. Yes. So feel free to skip a session and go take a nap, or take an extra long break, go and get a Starbucks, go take a walk outside, just kind of move your body, be in a new environment, have some time to be quiet, to be reflective, to get away from people, and recharge your batteries. And actually I have a video on my Facebook page that's called When It's Okay to Hide in the Bathroom. Because I know a lot of people who hide in bathrooms and networking events where they just are kind of getting people overload, and they just run to the bathroom and just read Reddit or look at Pinterest or whatever. It's just something to decompress, and it kind of feels like a weird thing. Yeah. You'd be amazed how many people do that, and that's important. So why not just kind of buffer that into your time and say, I think I'm going to start tapping out around X amount of time. Let me block that off, go get recharged, and then come back so I can come back and be my full self.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. Like, it's an interesting thing, right? Because let's face it, when you are at those events, you are on your best behavior. And it is easy to be on your best behavior for 1 minute or 5 minutes or 20 minutes. But like you said, 8 hours in, and then after 8 hours, it's really tough to kind of showcase the best mm-hmm. you that's available, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a really good point. I want to dig into something in your bio here. And obviously, connection for you is really important, right? Mm-hmm. And in your bio, I'm going to reread this. I know I've read this once, but this is so important and so poignant. So it says, Charisse went from being a PhD candidate at an Ivy League school to being homeless in New York City at the height of the 2008 recession. Now that can't mm-hmm. have been easy. She also goes on to say that experience taught her that while achievements and degrees are something to be proud of, human connection is the most valuable asset a person could have. So tell me a little bit about that, because it's interesting that out of all the things you could have written about financial stability, you could have written about having a rainy day account, you could have written about family, you wrote connection. Why mm-hmm. connection?
That is a great question. I, at the time, was very career driven and very focused, and that hasn't totally changed. I'm just kind of a driven type of person. But growing up, ever since I was 10 years old, I wanted to be a virologist, be a scientist who studies germs, and particularly viruses. And I wanted to go and save the world. This was my big dream. When I was 10 years old, I was like, I'm going to go get the Nobel Prize. I'm going to save the world. And it's going to be amazing. So then fast forward to the time where at this point, I'm in my early 20s and I'm in graduate school. And I'm getting my PhD as a germ scientist, specializing in viruses. I'm doing the very thing that I wanted to do. And I realized that this is not what I wanted. The reason why I wanted to get the Nobel Prize and save the world as a 10-year-old girl was because I wanted to make an impact in the world. I wanted to make a difference, and a difference that went beyond my nuclear family, beyond my community, beyond my city. I wanted to make a difference that really lasted, that was really a legacy. And kind of the picture that I see in my mind is a drop of water in a pond and how it makes ripples. I wanted to have huge ripples that just went on long beyond me. So when I got to graduate school, I realized that the work that I was doing was very interesting and probably not making huge ripples. I couldn't see the effects of my work. And that was really hard on me to keep working so hard. I mean, nights, weekends, holidays, being a grad student is rough. So I was working all of this time and not really seeing any results. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners, James, a lot of you guys listening right now can relate to that as entrepreneurs, where you can be working nights and weekends and holidays and not getting the results you want, and how frustrating that could be, which is, you know, thankfully why we have a show like this where you'll get some tips. But that's what I was feeling in my career. And I knew that I had to pivot to find a way to make an impact in a way that I could actually see and feel, and that could motivate me to keep going. And so that's when I went to, as my mom calls it, find myself at the worst possible time, at that time in American history, which was 2008. We're coming on a second worst time right now, but at the worst time for me as an adult. And at that time, I couldn't find a job anywhere, like not Starbucks, not McDonald's, anywhere. I mean, there were just no jobs. And I found myself homeless. And it was kind of a really big eye opener, because I had sacrificed so much time with family and friends over the years, you know, from age 10 to age 25. I had sacrificed so much time on the altar of career, on the altar of achievement, on the altar of impact. And I kind of pictured myself as an old, hopefully a very old woman by the time that I'm on my deathbed. And I looked around and I just thought to myself, will I really wish that I had more degrees on the wall? Is that what I'm going to regret laying on my deathbed? And I just thought, absolutely not. Who even cares? If there's no one to share it with, it doesn't even matter. And I thought, what I would love to have is lots of people around my deathbed who are crying because they're sad, because they're going to miss me when I'm gone, because I made an actual impact on their lives. Yes. So that's when I realized that, you know, it's more than these tangible external things like financial stability, like, you know, all those other things that are important. Those are all important. But for me on my deathbed, again, I wouldn't say I wish I had more financial stability. Maybe, but really I just would want people. Right. And I kind of feel like everything was stripped away from me at that time. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I had left was people.
It's really interesting, right? Because you kind of found your purpose and your path when you were at your lowest, and mm-hmm. if we can openly call it that. And a lot of the people, it's interesting, it almost writes like a movie. A lot of the people that I speak to, you know, and you would know some of these people, like Jay Fassett and Virginia mm-hmm. Muskies, they say that they really found their purpose, and they were talking about credit card maxed and, you know, mm-hmm. really needing to out of desperation finding it. You know, you were in many ways in worse off, right? You didn't have a home, right? It's really sad. It's very sad.
Or credit cards, which I guess is for the best.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting, right? Because you were super educated, and we always talk about education mm-hmm. being the key out of poverty. Well, you're kind of living proof that it doesn't happen that quickly. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you another question. Now, you and I discussed previously that, you know, one of your motivations was to get out of that shelter because you had seen people who had been there for years.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the difference between people who leave and people mm-hmm. who remain.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a good question. And the difference for me was very obvious there. And also, to be fair, there are some people that for them, living in a homeless shelter is a step up. Yes. From their previous experience.
Yes.
So for some people, this was them moving up. This was them getting out of terrible situation into an environment where they have food, they have shelter, they have safety. There are police officers everywhere and metal detectors and security guards. And, you know, they've got things that maybe they didn't have in their previous environment. So I can appreciate that. In addition, I could see that it was the way that people made plans or failed to make plans that determined whether or not they were going to stay there. So people who really were trying to make the shelter their home, people who were saying, you know, this is where I live, like as an identity, versus me. I never said this is my home. It was always, this is temporary. Mm-hmm. This is where I'm staying right now. This is where I'm at the moment. Like I always phrased it as a very temporary situation. And I always had my eye on what I was going to create next. I say always as if it was, as if every second I just had this big determination. That's not totally true. Mm-hmm. When I first was in the homeless shelter, I was just devastated. I was destroyed. I was, sure. You know, so disappointed in myself, overwhelmed with guilt and shame. And those people you see on the street who are begging, I was like, now I'm one of those people. And I mean, yeah. It was so, it plays so many games on your mind. There was a point where like I got, you know, if I got a stain on my shirt, I'd be like, oh, that's the homeless stain. Or whatever happened to me, I was just like, yeah, that's the homeless way to do it. You know, like I missed the train, just like the homeless people. I don't know. Everything I did was like covered in this lens of like lesser than, which was really humiliating and humbling. And anyways, in all of that, it wasn't like I just, you know, had this amazing attitude during that whole time. It was really difficult. And that experience lasted for 18 months.
Yeah.
It wasn't like just overnight, it was all different. But I will say that over the 18 months, I always kept my eye on what is next. What am I building? What am I creating? This is the lowest point of my life. And I am choosing to never be in this situation ever again. And I can only go up from here. Right. I remember having a conversation with my kind of like my caseworker at the shelter 2.0, because I moved to a couple shelters over that time.
Yes.
And I was telling him like, I have a job, I'm saving money, I'm getting up out of here. And he was just like, what is your rush? Why are you trying to get out so soon? And I was like, this is not me. This is not where I belong. This is not my place. Like, this is just not a good fit. And he was like, listen, you need to take time to get back on your feet. Make sure that when you leave, you're in a strong position so that you don't end up back here 6 months from now. And I was like, oh, okay. Like he literally had to slow me down because I was so anxious to get back to the life that I wanted to create and not the life that I was living by default.
Yes. It's interesting, right? So let me ask you this question as well. So, you know, you shifted from kind of like, and I'm quoting your words here, right? Like the homeless way to do things, right? Like the stain in the shirt. Right. And somehow you managed to say, you managed to create a plan, but it wasn't just a plan to get out of the shelter. It was a plan for something bigger. That's a big mindset shift between one, shifting all the way to the other. And I know we're kind of like shrinking down this down into a microcosm of what you went through 18 months. How important is your mind? How important is your belief in yourself when you actually take these plans one step at a time?
Mindset is everything. I am a huge fan of Tony Robbins, and this is something he talks about all the time. He's always like, you know, it's all about your mind. It's all about how you think. And when you're not applying that principle, it kind of doesn't mean anything. You're just like, yeah, sure. It's in my mind, whatever. But in a situation like that, where I could, in that shelter, I could literally feel at one point my mind slipping away and how scary that was. And I had to say, you know what? You make the decision. This is not up to somebody else. You're not the victim of anything. You always have the ability to make a choice. You always have a choice. Maybe it's not the choices, maybe the options are not options you like, but you have a choice and you need to make choices that make a difference. And kind of taking back that power, I was feeling kind of helpless and hopeless. And that feeling is very disempowering, right? Feeling disappointment, shame, guilt, regret, all of that is disempowering. Those are paralyzing emotions. But feeling rage, like mad that this situation is happening and refusal to stay in this situation, rage is very motivating. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those other types of emotions get you to act. They get you to do something differently. And I will say mindset is absolutely everything. I had a friend, one of my roommates in Shelter 2.0 that I was talking to, and I was saying, this is what I'm going to do next. And then I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to do this. And she was like, yeah, for me, I just really want to move into a nicer shelter. And because they have these other shelters over here that like the rooms are a little bigger or whatever. And I just looked at her. I was like, girl, what are you talking about? Why are you making plans to move from one shelter to another? This is not what you should be planning on. Plan to move out and to be on your own 2 feet. And it was kind of like her eyes just got wide. Like she hadn't thought about that. She just thought, well, this is my life. This is the river that I'm on. So I'm just going to ride it until the river just turns to another direction. And that is very disempowering. And unsatisfying for me.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're running, you know, and I'll leave the shelter thing alone afterwards, right? But tell me about running away from something versus running towards something.
You know, I feel like as long as you're running, it's probably better than staying still. Mm-hmm. So you could be running away from something you don't want and running towards something you do want, right? Because that movement is kind of a it's kind of getting you to the same place.
Right.
The dangerous place to be is to not move at all. And that's what I was seeing with some of the other people around me, is that they were just going along with the flow, right? They were living a life by default. Whatever happened kind of happened to them. And this is just their life. They're just kind of rolling with the punches. And while there is something to be said about being flexible, there's also something to be said about taking your own personal power, mm-hmm. making your own choices, and taking responsibility too, saying this is the part that I played and here's what I can now do. I think that is really, really powerful. And it doesn't matter if you're in a homeless shelter or a mansion, if you are standing still, that's kind of a problem. And Tony Robbins, to quote him again, has this saying, he says, if you're not growing, you're dying. I don't know if I totally agree with that, but I kind of see where he's coming from to say you're either moving forward or moving back. There is no standing still. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's kind of more what I'm saying, is that if you're not moving towards something or away from something, you're just kind of withering away, living this life of default, and you don't have to. That's totally optional.
Okay, good. Now you're a business networking coach, and one of the things I appreciate about you more than anybody, and I don't know if it's because you spent time in all sorts of, we'll call them halls of finance, right? So it can be everywhere from the homeless shelter all the way up to hobnobbing with seven and eight figure individuals, but you appreciate everybody. And I mm-hmm. love that. Tell me about how you can help everybody, because I think you can actually help everybody network better. Is it because you see them more? Is it because of education? Is it because of attitude? Like where do you think you really fit into this?
One of the things that has helped me a lot was actually being in that homeless shelter, just for a little throwback to our last conversation, was because, you know, I was coming from this Ivy League school, and I'm the first one in my family to go to college. So to go to grad school and to do all that was very special.
Yes.
And to be honest, I was an academic snob. I was very much like, I'm at this fancy school. I'm so smart. I'm smarter than all of you. And then here I am sitting next to somebody in the shelter who didn't finish high school. And it's kind of like, so what did all your degrees do? Nothing. Like, that does not make you special. That doesn't make you better than anybody else. And that was something that was really pivotal for me and so valuable for me to learn, of like, to just kind of relearn, because I didn't grow up a snob in any way, but I kind of I morphed into a snob over time. And it was kind of like, wait a minute, people are just people. It doesn't matter where you are, who you are, how, it doesn't matter. People are just people. And that's the difference between approaching an influencer, for example, one of these, you know, seven, eight figure people who I know. It's the difference between approaching them as a fanboy or a fangirl and approaching them as a peer. So when you're a fan, you're like, oh my gosh, you're so amazing. I love this book. I read it 3 times, you know, and that is like super heartwarming, right? It's like, oh, thanks so much. But then you're kind of like, okay, bye. You know, or like, I'll sign it for you, but you know, please move along. Right. Because that's a fan. There's a different kind of relationship you have with a fan. It's very superficial, and there's kind of a barrier there because you don't want a fan to kind of go crazy on you. But a peer is totally, totally different. A peer is just a person, and you can just talk to them openly. And I have found that when you approach anyone as a peer, regardless of their age or background or anything, is that it's appreciated and it feels like really respectful. When I became a college professor, which was at the same time that I was homeless, interestingly, I had just gotten a job as a college professor. I was a 26-year-old professor at a community college in the Bronx. So most of my students were 26 years old or older, and I looked like I was 12. So I'm teaching these college classes looking like a child, and it was kind of an adjustment for my students at first, but eventually they all kind of rolled with the punches. And what was so interesting was the results I got with my students versus everybody else, because I treated my students like peers, not just because we were the same age, but because they deserve the same amount of respect as anybody. And so my students always like just loved my classes and did so well. And then in my other coworkers, when they were in their classes, they would have so many challenges with them, the same students. And I was like, what is going on? And the teachers would tell me, oh, it's these students, they just don't listen. And the students would tell me, it's the teacher, they are so disrespectful. They treat us like idiots. And I was like, wow, you know, that's really interesting, is that even approaching your students as some kind of lesser than creature causes a divide, it causes a barrier. But approaching them as a peer, even as the teacher, even as the professor, just creates this environment of respect that I think everybody really appreciates.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, right? Now, you've spoken a lot about Tony Robbins, and I know you're really well read. Whenever we have private conversations, I think you throw at least 25 book titles my way, all of which I haven't read 24 of them. But I guess my question is, you're really well read. What is your superpower? So when you, next year, when we have this conversation, and when you're no longer new and novel, when you are a stalwart and you're writing a book, what is the superpower that you bring that no one else brings?
I don't know if this is unique to me, but this is something that I highly value, and that's authenticity. And that's a big part of my brand, is when I'm helping people to connect with potential mentors, partners, clients, influencers, it all comes from a place of being authentic, of really being yourself. And that, I think, is, I don't want to say it's lacking, but it's kind of hard, especially in entrepreneurial circles, to do, because we want to look a certain way. We want to look like we have a certain level of success or experience or knowledge, or really most often people are just very embarrassed about wherever they are, and they feel like they're not wherever they should be. And so it's kind of like this apologetic thing where people are like, oh, my list is not that big. Oh, my products aren't that good. Or, you know, they come from this place of like, I'm not worthy, because they're afraid to seem successful and be found out. But all of that is inauthentic. That's not really who you are. That's not a sober judgment of your positioning. You can say I'm new without apologizing. And you can say I've experienced without having to prove it. I mean, you obviously have to prove, but you know what I mean? Without having to like shove it down people's throats and show all your awards and all this different stuff. And so I think one of the things I bring to the table just in general, in all relationships, is an authenticity, a willingness to be vulnerable and be myself, which gives other people the freedom to be vulnerable and be themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And let's face it, we can't improve on something if we're not vulnerable and see exactly where we are. Because if we think we're here and we're actually here, well, you can't improve on a dream in many ways. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, right? Because at the event that you and I went to, when a lot of events, you'll notice it's like the 80-20 rule. The 20%, you know, have done their homework and are really quite inspirational. And the other 80% want to be those 20%, but some of them don't know how to get there. And I think that's that missing piece where you come in, right? And I think mm-hmm. in many ways, the authenticity goes beyond that. You know, I've known you for not that long, but it seems like you actually can read people really well. And I don't mean that in a freaky kind of psychology way, but in a way that makes them feel comfortable and makes them say, you know what, I don't know what I'm doing, and that's okay. And that's part of the reason why you're going to be an amazing coach. And I know that.
Thank you.
Okay. One more question and then we'll get to your 3 points. So, I'm curious. So you've had, I know we've kind of, magnified this 18 months of being homeless, but you know, taken as a whole, your resume is very impressive, right? You have a PhD candidate in the Ivy League school. You're a virologist, right? Which, mm-hmm. you know, Lord knows the world right now could use. And, you know, you're creating companies and you shifted so many times. You're an educator in LA, right? And mm-hmm. I'm sure that has its rewards as well. Is there mm-hmm. a mantra that you live by? Like, is Tony Robbins in the back of your mind all the time? Or what gets you up in the morning, and what gets you to build something?
That is such a great question. I do read a lot of books. I do really invest quite heavily in my personal development as well as my professional development, because they're connected. So I do highly, highly value growth and variety. And so if I'm not doing something new or creating something new, then I just feel kind of bored and complacent and kind of like I'm wasting however many days I still have on this earth, which I don't even know how many there are. But if it's something that's exciting to me, a project that I'm working on that I can be really proud of, then that excites me. And as I get to the conclusion of a project, I will start to create the next project so that I stay in a state of excitement and so that I get keep trying things that are kind of new and things that I don't know how they're going to turn out. For example, James, you and I are both, you know, podcasters now, but that was not on our radar maybe 2 months ago.
Nope.
That wasn't something we were considering. And so that's kind of a new but really exciting journey to see where that's going to go. And my co-host and I were already locked in for sure. We do a show all about Star Trek. And so we're locked in to review all 7 seasons of The Next Generation, which is going to take us about 3.5 years. So we're already committed to doing years and years of just talking about the same show that we've been talking about our whole lives. So it's no different. But even something like that, we're already thinking now, what are we going to do after 3.5 years when we finish the last episode of the last season? What are we going to do next that's going to be even more exciting, that's going to just really charge us? And we already have plans for that. And that's years down the road. So yeah. I think for me, it's just growth. It's just having something that you're excited about, that you can build, that can create community, that can create connection, that can create fun is really important too. If it's not fun, I kind of don't want to do it. Those things motivate me.
I know I said I would get to your 3 points. I totally lied, because I want to just ask you about this question, because and I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of sub jobs in here, right? But you're an educator.
Yeah.
You have you're a PhD candidate. You're starting your own business, like all these things, mm-hmm. and it's interesting, right? Because a lot of people, let's for example say you are in marketing and you work for a big firm. And they say, find your own freedom. Okay, I'm going to go out and start my own company I'll have all these options, but I'm going to start in marketing because that's what I know. And then, I don't have enough money, so I'm going to do contract in marketing. And so you kind of get stuck in this hamster wheel going round and round. And maybe the reason why you're not doing well in marketing is because you actually don't like it, right? Mm-hmm. There's potential for that. Can you comment a little bit about how scary it is to change, but how important it is for self-growth when you do?
Yeah, I had a student one semester who is, he's an international student, and he brought me aside to the side and he said, "Professor, I want to know what job I can get here in the States that makes a lot of money, because the whole reason why I'm here is to get a job that makes a lot of money so I can send money back home to my family. I am their main source of support and I'm in the land of opportunity. So I just need a job that makes a ton of money so I can support my family." And so I said to him the same thing we always say to people in America. I said, "Well, what's your passion? What do you care about?" And he was just like, "Why do people here keep asking me that? I don't care about passion. I care about money. I need to make money to take care of my family. I don't care what it's in. It just needs to be enough." And so I told him, "Well, here's the reason why a lot of people here in America say passion, at least from my perspective, is because you can make money doing just about anything. You can make money in this country doing anything. I know a woman who makes her living with snakes, and she does photo shoots with snakes, and she does snake therapy with snakes, and that this is her thing. And she makes a ton of money and is super famous because who else does that? And she's really passionate about her snake charming abilities." So I'm like, I wouldn't tell my middle school students, "Someday you should grow up and do snake charming." But obviously that works for this woman, right? So I was like, in this country, you can really, if you have a mind for it, back to that mindset piece, if you have a mind for it, you can make money doing just about anything. And that's why a lot of times we start with what's your passion, because if you're really excited about it and passionate about it, you can find a way, move the pieces around, get the connections you need to somehow make that work for you. I think the reason why a lot of people stay in the safe zone and say, "Well, I've been doing marketing for X number of years. I'm a marketing expert. Why not just do a marketing business?" is because it's comfortable and it's safe. So even though it's scary to go out on your own, it's a lot less scary if you know what the heck you're doing. If at least you know marketing, you at least know the topic, you have some kind of ground to stand on. And I think that's fine. I think it's fine as far as getting a place to start. I also think that if you weren't happy doing it in corporate, you're probably not going to be happy doing it on your own either. And in fact, you'll be more miserable because you have to work so much harder on your own business than you ever have to work when you're working for somebody else. I once heard somebody say entrepreneurs are the kind of people who would rather work 90-hour weeks for themselves rather than 40-hour weeks for somebody else. And I thought, that's very true. That's very true, right? Because that line between work and family and all of that, it just blurs. When you're an online entrepreneur, all of that can just blur, and it's kind of all one thing. So while I do think finding your passion is going to be more helpful for the long run, starting is better than not starting. Yeah. It's better to start and be open to pivot. And you also don't want to start and say, "Well, I have to do this and I'm stuck in this forever." Cause that's kind of what you were doing in your career, right? You were stuck in that forever, and you don't have to be stuck. You can just make a different choice.
How important is a coach or mentor at helping you find yourself or your path?
A mentor is really, really important. Mentors can look at a couple different ways. You can have a mentor or a coach as someone that you hire, that you pay, that you have regular conversations with, who's up to date on what you're doing and kind of holds you accountable. You can have that one-on-one thing. You can also have kind of group mentors. You can be a part of different communities. I'm a part of a couple different Facebook groups where every single week there's accountability posts where you just post in where you have questions, what you're stuck on, what you're working on, what your wins are. And there are people there who kind of support and help me through that. You can also have mentors in books and podcasts like this. And all of these different kind of media forms where you can be learning from someone else's experience. And that's also a type of mentorship. You can learn their tips, their ideas, their strategies. You can learn from what they've been through. You can learn from what's worked and what hasn't worked. I try to use every type of mentorship that I can get my hands on. Growing up as a kid, I didn't have a lot of strong role models around me. So I just had to kind of, had to really search them out. Or a lot of times, actually, I would just look to like TV, to totally fake characters who only exist in the movies. And I would make those my role models. And I would be like, I know this person's fake, but I really love this about them. And this is the kind of person I want to be. And sometimes that's what you need. Like, I'll tell you, with my Star Trek fascination, one of the captains on one of the shows is a female captain. And she's really smart. She's really strong. She's super courageous. She's very selfless. I love the way she leads. And that's the kind of leader that I want to be. And she's a totally fake character. And I'm like obsessed with her because that's the kind of leader that I want to be. So yeah, I would just, mentorship and learning is so, so, so important. And it can come in a lot of different forms.
Yeah. It's cool, team. That's amazing stuff. And you know, it's interesting because coaches and mentors, as Cherie said, come in all sorts of forms. You know, one of the best things they can do sometimes is challenge your preconceived notions, challenge what's out there and help you grow. And sometimes change is tough. I'm not saying it's easy. But look at Cherie, she's had to go through the fire to find the flame. And by the way, I'm trademarking that. I don't know if anybody else has said that or not, but I'm going to go
with a no, probably not. But one of the things I wanted to mention too, that what yes. you just said about mentors is that not only do they kind of help you see the way and help you see the path, they also help you avoid pitfalls that you can't see coming because you haven't done this before. I can't tell you the number of times I've listened to a mentor, maybe on a webinar, on a coaching call, something in a book where I've been like, oh, I was totally going to do that. I was totally going to make that mistake. I was already in the process of it when you said, by the way, whatever you do, don't do this. I was just about to do that. And like that also is worth its weight in gold. When we were at the conference where we met, one of the women there specializes in 5-day challenges. And we had a little coaching session and I was saying, yeah, this is how I want to start my challenge. And she was like, whatever you do, don't do that. That's one of my number one tips to not do. And I was like, oh, you know, she's like, everyone does it and it's wrong. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like how much time did she just save me to just say, don't do it that way. Do it this way. Yeah.
Yep. It's amazing stuff, right? So with that being said, let's listen to your three tips. What are three tips? So just a reminder, folks, and you already know this because you're listening, but every show we talk about three tips that the successful entrepreneur can give us to improve either the business or the business owner. So Cherie, the floor is yours.
Thanks. Okay, so we've been talking about the importance of connection, which I value very highly, not only as a person, but also in business. Finding the right business connections is the difference, can be the difference between your business burning and crashing and just disintegrating or being really successful. Because at the end of the day, people do business with people. They don't do it with nameless, faceless corporations. They do it with people. And if you are a solopreneur or an entrepreneur with a small team, you kind of have an advantage there because people, you're more accessible. You're more real. You're a real human with past experiences. And so that is something you can definitely leverage and use to your advantage. When it comes to creating profitable partnerships from scratch, which is kind of my thing, I have three tips to help you on your way. The first tip is when you are going to networking events or conferences, whether they be virtual or in person, I challenge you to, instead of look for clients and customers, which is usually what people say, right? Go to those events and find the perfect client or customer, but then you're there with like 1,000 people and then only maybe 3 of them are a good client, but then none of them want to work. You know, it just gets really dumb. Or instead, I would challenge you to try to find partners. Try to find people who serve an audience of your ideal client or customer. Because think about it, if you take 3 days and go through 1,000 new people you've met in order to find 10 new clients, that could be valuable to you. Mm-hmm. And if you do the same amount of work, but you find 10 new partners who could each provide 10 new clients, that's exponentially more powerful. So that's my first tip, is changing the focus from looking for potential clients to potential partners. My second tip is to be in community. Get into a community online or in person that has these perfect potential partners. And there's a difference between community and proximity. So I just want to spell that out. Proximity is just being there. So you just join, you just show up, you're part of the Facebook group, or you just show up to the networking event and you don't really do much. Being in proximity is a good start. It's better than not being in proximity, but it's also not the same as being in community. Being in community means engaged, involved, having and building relationships with people, adding value to the group. So, and by adding value, I don't mean spamming, by the way. I mean actually adding value, listening to people, cheering them on, sharing your thoughts, your wins, your questions, your struggles. So being in community is my second tip. My third tip is, when you are looking for potential partners, also consider looking for influencers. So influencers could be micro influencers. So these are great people to partner with, which means they have a smaller audience. And again, small and large is relative. So it's whatever that means to you. But influencers can also have a huge audience. And either way, you really want to connect with them in a way that adds value to them and their tribe, and that shows them the value that you can bring to the people that they serve. That is going to be so incredibly powerful, because influencers already have people who know, like, and trust them, and they're constantly looking for good content to put in front of them. They're constantly looking for people who can come and help them to serve better. And if you can be that person and meet that need and show that value, I mean, that's just going to be huge. That's going to take it so much further. So looking for partners in general is awesome. Looking for influencers, or kind of like the partners that you know about before you go to the event, that's what I'm talking about with an influencer. There's somebody you can do a little bit of research on before you see them.
Yeah, amazing stuff, right? So those 3 points, just to go over them, are look for partners at events, be in community with potential partners, and look for influencers. Now, influencers has really, a lot of people get intimidated when they look for influencers. Do you have any tips on how to do it? And that's sort of where you come in, isn't it? You were talking about looking at them as an icon or a hero versus looking at them as a peer. And that's a really, really tough thing to do, isn't it? Getting your mind wrapped around it so you truly have a conversation with these people.
Yeah, I actually do. I have a whole video on, like, do I have a couple videos? I made a couple, but at least there's one for sure that's still on my Facebook page about connecting with influencers. So I'll just tell you what I remember from that video. When you are approaching an influencer, if you want to be seen as a fan, the first thing you want to do is go, "Oh my gosh, you're so amazing. Can I get a picture?" That's going to put you right in that fan category. There's nothing wrong with being a fan, but it's not going to serve your purposes if you're looking to eventually partner with this person, because it's really hard to break out of that box once you've been put in the fan box. It's hard to get back out. So here is my recommendation for when you're meeting an influencer. You go up to them and thank them for something they have done for you, some way that their work has contributed to your life, and give them an incredibly specific compliment. For example, I actually just did this earlier today with one of my mentors, who is Todd Herman. He is a mental toughness peak performance coach who works with Olympic athletes and entrepreneurs. And so I told him, thank you for he had this mental health checker that he had sent out to his people a couple months ago. And it's like this Excel sheet, and you put in different stuff and you get some number, and it's like, this number means your mental health is good. This number means, you got some issues. And I was like, I got some issues. Like, a couple months ago, I was like, I got some issues. I didn't know this was bad. I didn't know it was that bad. So today I was like, you know what? Thank you for the mental health checker. Like, I appreciate that. That helped me see more clearly where I was and where I wanted to be. That is an authentic compliment that is very specific and manageable and memorable. So that's step one, is I would say, or that's one tip, is thank them for a specific result that you've gotten from their work. Another thing you can do is, if maybe you don't have a specific result, like maybe you read their book and you think it's good, but there's nothing you actually applied from it, or any result that you got from it specifically. Instead, you can congratulate them on something amazing that you know that they just did, because if you are really a fan, you probably follow them. So you can be like, hey, I just wanted to say congratulations. I saw that your latest book just came out last month. I saw it everywhere. So many people were promoting it. I have it on my list. You know, it's on my Kindle right now. You know, be honest, right? If you haven't read it, don't say I read it, you know, but yeah. Like, be honest and just congratulate them for something that has recently happened that you know that they're proud of. And both of those things position you as a cool person and a potential peer and keeps you out of the fan box.
Yeah, amazing stuff. So, Charisse, if people wanted to get in touch with you or maybe learn more about the opportunities that you present, how would they do that?
You can find me at jvjoy.com. And I have a free gift, James, for everyone who's listening or those of you who are watching. And you can find that at jvjoy.com/10 tips. And what the free gift is this. It is my top 10 tips for connecting with influencers. And it's a little more than 10 tips, but I'm going to call it 10 tips and you get some bonus ones in there about how you can connect better with influencers. And you can start doing that stuff today.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. And that's 10, the numbers or the, or written out with
10, the number.
Right. Okay. Awesome. So team, that's going to be in the show notes anyways. But look, Charisse, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. I only met Charisse a few months ago, but
both of our worlds. But it feels like years, doesn't it?
It feels like years because we've done so much, right?
Yeah.
It's no longer 8-hour work days. It's now 80-hour work days, not work week.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Tell me final thoughts. Final thoughts about what we talked about today.
So one of the things that I just want to leave you with is that you're really only one relationship away from changing your life and changing your business. Everything that happens in business and in life, right, happens because of other people. And you are connected to whoever you need to be connected to make huge differences, and that network can only grow. So I just want to encourage you guys to keep going out there, keep making connections, keep adding value, keep growing your network, because that will grow your business.
Awesome team. And if you're any Star Trek fans out there, and I know there are certainly some if you follow me, 100%, please follow. It's TNG Podcast. Is that right?
Yep. You can go to the TNG Podcast is our handle on all social media channels. And you can find us out at find out more about us at thetngpodcast.com.
Awesome. Final question. Favorite Star Trek character?
Data.
Why?
Because he's kind of like, he's an artificial life form and he doesn't quite understand humanity. So he's made it his life's mission to understand how humans work. And so have I.
Awesome. Awesome answer. All right, team. I think we'll wrap it up there. Look, it's been a pleasure. And keep in mind, folks, these guests that we have on who are the absolute best at what they do, we don't pay them a dime to be on here. So if you have any interest in visiting them, they would be thrilled. And I would be thrilled to have you visit them as well. So again, it's Three Steps to Thrive. My name is James Lamb. Pleasure having Charisse Alexander on the show. Every episode, we have three practical, actionable, and simple tips to improve the business or the business owner. One more reminder, team, if you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and please review it. It's the way we get our message out to more small business owners. Small business owners make the world go around, but I know if you're a small business owner, some of you are putting in way more time than you need to and getting so little financial benefit. And this is one of those easy ways I can change. So please give us a 5-star review. Let everybody know, and that means the world to me, and I'm sure Charisse as well. So team, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I look forward to seeing you next week, same time, same place. Don't forget, if you love this podcast, please leave a review. One of my goals is to support as many entrepreneurs and small business owners as possible with these simple, actionable, and practical tips. My team and I spend countless hours finding great guests who are experts in their field, and these people 100% volunteer to be on this show. And one of the best ways to help other people find this podcast is with your review. So if you would be so kind and subscribe and leave a review, this show can get out to more people, and I would be forever grateful. So thank you in advance. Okay, guys, thanks so much once more for tuning in. See you next week and have a great few days.